Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Welcome, everybody, to Tracking Connections podcast. This is Aiden.
This is Sarah, and we are here with Martha, Susu, and Patrick.
Yeah, and this is John, and I'm really excited to welcome these three wonderful people, very longtime Tracker School students, and lots of great skills in let's just say, in the bush, really. They're really good at a lot of different things, and they decided to give it a try to apply designing with natural cycles at a gathering. And we've been excited to have this conversation for quite a while, but it's hard to get a lot of people together. But I'm really thankful you're all here. And so I'm going to send it over to Susu first, and you can tell us a little bit about what happened.
Yeah, so we had a Tracker School regional gathering that was self-organized by ourselves and sort of a emergent group organization process that we were in. And I guess the impetus for having the gathering falls on my shoulders. I'm kind of new to the region, and I wanted to meet everybody. I hadn't met anybody in our region in person, and I am very deeply involved in participating in these spiritual journeys with these people and with this lineage, and hadn't actually had a physical experience with the people closest to me physically in my region. So it was really important to me to make that connection, you know, especially with all the changes and constant flux going on in our world. I think that physical piece is important. And also on a personal journey that I'm on, a building community, it's important for me to have the physical component to that. And the Tracker School is a main community of mine, very important. So I reached out to our regional coordinator and to Patrick, and we started talking about this gathering and where it's going to be and, you know, how we're going to reach out to everybody else and get connected. And yeah, it kind of evolved from there. We ended up doing it in Crestone, Colorado, which was Patrick's idea, at a campground there that was not quite fully open yet, but not restricted in the use of it. So it was the perfect little spot on Crestone Creek. Yeah, that's sort of the background to it. And then we did end up bringing in the Eight Shields design model. Martha and I were in the middle of the Eight Shields masterclass with John and Sarah and Aiden. So Martha, do you want to speak a little bit? That was kind of your decision and idea to bring that in.
Yeah, and thank you to Connie for wanting to learn the fisherman's skills, which Patrick embodies so well. That was why we picked the beautiful Crestone River to meet. And yeah, I jumped in after you guys started, because I thought I could help, you know, design and plan. And we had the typical Zoom meetings, and we went through the typical who's coming, how many, you know, no answers, just a lot of questions. And you and I kept getting in small groups, breakout rooms in the Zoom calls. And I think it was the fifth or sixth class of the Natural Design Cycles masterclass that you referred to, when something just clicked in me and I go, oh my gosh, we're challenged with designing this gathering, and yet we have these tools. What a great opportunity to practice them. And I'd been involved with the 10 stones for building community earlier, and I had seen incredible results and outcomes from focusing and then surrendering to those principles and bringing people together in community. And I'll come back around. My enthusiasm was how it flowed and how we communicated in a way that was not familiar. Well, I won't say not familiar to me, but it was a new experience to let go, to have the intent, you know, the gratitude, the 10 stones, and intentionally the directional attributes, and then just, you know, let the keeper keep us going.
for folks who don't know what the 10 stones are, they're basically cultural elements that hold a container. There are practices like gratitude and welcoming people, but they're also principles of, you know, focusing on the positive in people and kind of ways of being in community together. I'm really curious, Martha, how did you use the natural design cycles when you were planning? Can you give some examples of how you used the time of day cycle or which cycles you used, that kind of thing?
We did, I think, the bare bones. I think we really wanted to do the directional attributes where each one of four people held the space. I was north, south, Patrick was east, west. That was the key for me, and the other could speak to it. We did the morning gathering in a circle. We welcomed new members as they came in. Because we knew this was going to be really fluid and flowing, we just had to have some structure that was pretty general to commit to. And so I would say the natural design cycles that we held to the most would be the directional attributes.
Awesome. So there's four of you as leaders, I think I'm hearing.
Yes.
So four main people were kind of tasked with holding attributes in that natural design cycle of attention to detail, to tending people around that attribute.
Yeah, and because there were only four of us, we each held the opposite, the polarity, right? So I did north and south, which was an amazing experience to have an awareness of the relationship of the opposites. Yeah, and so we held that. I held that as I went through the day, right? But I would say it was also our attention to the closing, opening and closing circle and bringing in everybody in. And I want to say that we didn't know who was coming, really, how many people would come. And y'all kept correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like at least half of the people were new to Tracker. And there were a lot of family and friends and the two children that showed up. And how everybody felt included in our closing circle brought me to tears.
As far as design goes, you know, in our initial conversations, something that John mentioned years ago, which I've learned to be true, is draw people in with a skill or something that you're teaching that'll draw people in. And then when you get them there, that's when you unleash the community design on them. And sort of, it's very subtle. It's not always outwardly stated, just like we learn in Art of Mentoring. And so for me, I approached it from, okay, how are we going to greet people? Who are we going to invite? And we had a long discussion about opening it up to family, which I felt was really important because I've organized a lot of these gatherings in this region in the past, and we've always just had it be the students. And so people are leaving their kids and spouses at home. And I said, that's just not, doesn't make sense to me. And it's not really working. Let's invite a large range of, let's tell people you can bring close friends if they're in alignment with what we're doing and family, and opened it up that way. And having Takani there, how old is he? Seven? Having a seven-year-old there changed everything. It changed everything. It changed the energy. It changed the dynamic. It changed the focal points. It changed the inflection points. He basically ran the thing in one sense. And we talked about that when we were processing it, that he did, in a lot of ways, run the whole thing for us. It was amazing to see that. And, you know, for me, like I said, when we were talking about this earlier, was I was like, okay, I'm charged with teaching the fishing part. And so, like, I've run an outdoor school for kids and I've done kids camps, and it's like, okay, here's your block of time. And it was funny because even when we were talking over and over again, what's Patrick's block of time for teaching? We could not nail it down. And we were planning stuff out really thoroughly, but we couldn't nail my teaching time down. And there was a reason for that. It was because I felt like the keeper of the entire meeting was working with me. We're not going to teach this in a normal didactic way. We're not going to do that. We're going to do something really different. And so I had to actually listen to the keeper of this group to find out what that different way was in the now moment. I had to listen to that because I have no idea what's going to happen next, because we're not on the schedule that I thought, you know. And I mean, I'd given that up a long time ago before we even got there. I was like, okay. And so there was a lot of flow and oneness. And one of the things that happened, which the other lineage I'm studying with, someone mentioned, was I actually waited for the fish, the keeper of the fish, to tell me now. And so I didn't fish for the first day and a half while everybody out was out crazy fishing and one guy was getting frustrated. And I said, you know, I don't like to look at it like I'm going fishing. I like to look at it like I'm going for a walk with a fishing pole, and we'll see what happens, you know. And but it was really interesting because I saw two fish rise, and I just said now. And I everybody else was burnt out and done. And I got up and I got out there, and in 20 minutes I landed 7 fish. So listening to the keeper became this huge thing for me in this whole process, and I really appreciated that. We had evening gatherings where we would process the day, and there was a lot of heartfelt communication happening. It was very real. And people that had never been in our community before, that had no association with Tracker School, were really impressed. There was a counselor that came with someone, and she just cried. She was like, this is so much what I need, and we need to do this more.
That's so awesome. I want to pull out that piece of listening to the keeper for people that aren't necessarily familiar with that language. So what Patrick's referring to is when we're together in a group of people or fish, there is an overall field that is not just the sum of each person there, not just, you know, it's a group of people, but there's an intelligence that emerges out of being together in a connective way that we can call the keeper, or we can call the emergent mind in interpersonal neurobiology. And the 10 stones of connective culture, those cultural elements are designed basically to bring that emergent mind to the forefront, and also bringing in the attributes of connection and the designing with natural cycles are moving toward that overall field of having, you know, each aspect of a natural cycle present, or attribute of connection present, to create this field that's generative. And I keep hearing the crying, right? It's truly connective, where we're together in a way that's maybe different than a normal socializing experience, right? We're coming together with gratitude and awareness of nature. And again, that listening that you were talking about, Patrick, is so key. You're listening to the overall field. You're not just focusing on my tasks or what I'm doing or how I'm, you know, only relating with other people one-on-one, but you're listening to that broader field.
Right. There's so much that is unsaid here. You know, it's the convergence of two different approaches that people are used to organizing gatherings and running them in, you know, kind of a task-oriented way, or maybe it's agenda-driven or time-driven. You know, that's what people are used to, right? And then Patrick is bringing in that sense that it's not coming together that way, right? And when we're designing with natural cycles, you know, we're sort of tapping into a very old way of facilitating gatherings. And it is always happening when we're running events based on, you know, these eight directional archetypes. And Patrick was really holding that East archetype, that welcoming, right? And paying attention to that group mind, that group field, the keeper, however you want to describe it. The person who founded Tracker School, Tom Brown, was my mentor for the last 53 years. And he talks about doing things in the way of the coyote, which in essence is, you know, to really be in the present moment and see what is being asked for and really pay attention with your gut feeling, your intuition, or what he might call inner vision, to see when the time is right for something to happen. You know, so it seems unstructured, it seems very natural, it seems in the moment, you know, it's at earth time, it's in the flow of natural time. But the most powerful things happen when you do that. And when you use these 10 stones, which is, you know, making sure everyone feels truly welcome, you know, give them a chance to wipe off the road dust so they can be present, you know, lift up gratitude and, you know, listen unconditionally to one another. And then, you know, be allowing, the culture of allowance is what Patrick is also describing. You know, now is not the time. I'm just going to let it go. And if we were agenda driven, you know, it would say at 10:15 we're supposed to do this activity, right? And what he's basically saying is, no, I'm just going to allow, you know, and the timing will be right. And so then everyone is paying attention for timing, and it just sort of activates a much older part of our nervous system. We look to lift the gift up in everyone else. And, you know, Takani, the 7-year-old, you know, became the symbol for the gathering. You know, why else are we holding these teachings if we're not passing them forward? And how important that is for this stuff to go to the next generation, and how everybody in their heart, they sense that, and it becomes very beautiful. You know, so that's some of the 10 stones. You know, the other one is just light facilitation. And then, you know, using your best approach, being in peace when you speak to people and listening well to each other, and then really attending to the awareness of that group field, that keeper, that other presence, that intelligence that is the fusion of all of our presence, plus the fish, you know, and plus the trees and the land, you know, it all weaves into that group field. And it really is transformative. Well, the 10th stone is just remembering to have a closing at the end of each day, right? Or a closing at the end of the gathering, so people feel that completion. So I wanted to fill that in for the listeners, because these are subtle and powerful. And when you walk into a gathering, you don't really see it happening, but you feel it really quickly. And it just makes for the best conditions for people connecting and going to tears and feeling so much gratitude and be like, oh, we need to be like this more, and all those sorts of things. So I love this. And so there was four of you, each holding an axis, east, west, north, south, southwest, northeast, northwest, southeast. And how many people arrived at this gathering besides the four of you that you were facilitating? I'll pass that over to Susu.
Yeah, thanks, John. I think there were roughly 16 people there total, including my two children who were 3 and 7. And yeah, I think what you just said about the keeper was definitely the driving force. You know, we were bringing in some conscious competence, as you would say, in your design classes. So we were, you know, we had some training and some background knowledge of how we were designing this. And then we sort of let that go into the unconscious and asked the keeper to carry us through. So we were, we did have sort of a schedule and we had plans and stuff. And then we really just were being more than in the flow, but being just really attuned to the natural world and this emergent mind that was very present. And the more that we attune into that, the stronger that it responds and guides the experience. So that was really powerful to see that happening. And we started each day with an opening circle, a circle of gratitude and setting the stage, calling in the keeper and the 10 stones. And so we shared in each circle, I shared the words that come before all else, the Haudenosaunee Thanksgiving address, which is calling in and naming gratitude for all of the elements and species. And I think that really, I noticed how powerfully that interacts with the keeper, calling in all of the elements of the natural world, bring them into the gathering, and then they become part of that emergent mind. So it's not just the mind of the humans who are there, but now the whole natural world is participating in this emergence. And that's where like the fish started, the time of the day that the fish were biting, and Patrick being attuned to that. And the weather was participating with us that I noticed. The plants were showing up. There were some medicinal plants that showed up on the plant walk that one of our plant experts in the tracker school, she was bringing us on a plant walk. And yeah, there were some really powerful healing plants that she had never seen there before that showed up during this. And, you know, I think it felt like, okay, they were showing up partly because we called them in and we acknowledged them and they were participating in the gathering with us. So I thought that participation was really powerful. And also the sense of unity that the humans had in the circle, they became really deep relational circles. And like we were saying, there were several people that were brought to tears. Some people had kind of more experience in therapeutic settings. And then one young man, one or two of them, were very, very new to this kind of relating in circles. And they really had these just heart opening. Looked like maybe the first time they'd been cracked open in a group setting like that, one of them in particular. So that was cool to see that them being introduced to that kind of experience.
Martha, what are your reflections on the experience?
I'll pick up where Susu left off about, well, there were 16 people that came, and the age ranges were amazing. The two young men and the two children, and how in the opening circle, people were, you could see visibly unsure of themselves, not wanting to be vulnerable. And by the end, it was a short time. It wasn't even a full weekend. It was like, I think Saturday, we got everybody there and then we left. It was one day, really. It was amazing. And there was a lot of activity. That was the other thing I wanted to talk about. We did a plant walk and there was basket making. People had their hands busy with skills. So a lot of skills were taught other than the focus on the fishing. And ordinarily to coordinate that, like you were saying, with schedules, and it just flowed and it happened from this, the emergent mind. And everybody either took the basket home to finish, red willow basket. So it was just an example for me of what I want to build as a community and how I want to build it and participate with people.
Yeah, that I think you, in not even, 48 hours, you probably changed lives. I'm really feeling that from these stories and all these elements you're weaving together. And then probably for the people who were there, it probably looked like you weren't doing anything, you know, like it just seemed that it was just sort of organic and flowing and invisible in the best way.
When you just described that, Martha, you said, oh, it wasn't even a full weekend, you know, it was a little more than a day, you know. The thing that really strikes me there is like, that's repeatable. That's scalable. You're talking about this idea of building community, you know? And I think sometimes when I think about this stuff and we're talking about, oh, let's get everybody together for a whole week at a time, you know, that's a huge lift, you know? And I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. We absolutely should do that when we can. But this idea of a weekend together, as you all describe the transformative nature of it, it feels like I would have just assumed it was a week long, you know? So this is just really, really heartening to me. And I think my question for any of you that wants to take it is sort of, where are you heading from here?
So we did have, along with that emergent mind comes kind of this energy of emergence into the future. What are we going to do with this beautiful experience that we've built up here? So there are a few ideas that came out of it. One being to repeat the weekend-long experience, similar to what we had maybe in slightly different locations within the region, and doing that on a more regular basis, maybe once a season or twice a year. And that's sort of the extent of where we could imagine ourselves having, you know, the time commitment to be able to do that. But we also talked about continuing online with the connective portion of it, the human connection, you know, and just practicing those attributes of connection. And then another thing that I found interesting that did also emerge out of it, which might have been partly that I was drawing it out or that I was noticing it more because it's my focus right now, and that is more of a call to have more of a permanent community, a kind of a residential community. That's my personal... What I'm tracking right now is this vision of a more residential, more place-based, intentional community. And so it was interesting to me. I brought that up, and in some of our circles that we were having, more coming from just where I'm coming from. And it was really well received, and it seemed really resonant with everybody, or at least a large group of the people who were there. And it's this sort of idea that's been present in the group before I was part of the group, and now we've been continuing with that thread since the gathering has ended. We've been talking about it one-on-one, connect each of the people that were there connecting, and then we have a email thread that's going on about that. So that was one thing that I was kind of surprised and also excited about that there was so much group momentum behind that, because it is the personal momentum that I have. So I was very interested to see that that was a common theme that other people were also interested in.
Yeah. You know, the thing when I was working with this model back in the early 80s, there was no way we could form a residential community. It was suburban New Jersey on the edge of rural land. Everything was way out of hand price-wise. There was not a big enough place that you could actually, like, for instance, you know, subdivide and make a development that might have based on agreements, you know, like the way Marcelo Valenzi did in Laico Villa in Costa Rica, which is an amazing project. But we decided to just go with the short format, repeat, you know, a weekend or two a month where we would just gather around a theme. And not everybody showed up at every one. It was a lot of the same people showed up every time, but there was always people who were different around the edges. And we just did that for, gosh, Aidan, since you were born into that, you know, and for the first, you know, 10 years of your life, that's pretty much what was going on. And what ended up occurring from that was these relationships formed between the parents. You know, there's like sort of among modern adults, there's a lot of mistrust horizontally, if you will, you know, and if you just keep working with these connective processes, they begin to bond and then they become like the aunts and uncles to the children. And that's where the magic really goes deep, and that whole intergenerational quality. And it felt like we had a residential community. You know, people were driving, you know, 15, 20 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever to get to this farm where we all met. But it started to feel that way. So, you know, just for the listeners out there, like, oh, yeah, I'd really love to live in a connective community. And then all of a sudden we start thinking about, you know, finding developers and getting land and subdividing and legal contracts and all that kind of stuff. And then usually it just sort of fizzles out. But the beauty of the model that you guys are playing with is that you can do that in the meantime, right? On the way to this other larger idea. And it's probably better to do that in the meantime anyway, because then everyone gets to know each other, you know, which then you'll start to understand, you know, what the dynamics could be should you all decide to get into a relationship like an intentional, you know, residential eco village or something like that. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. But this little model that you guys ran, I hope you do run more of these. And I wish I was there personally. I'm hearing it. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like such a good time.
So as John is describing, you know, people coming together in a typical way and then shifting over to this kind of intentional design with natural cycles, I'm hearing from all of you the actual ease, right, and organicity within that, and how people just attune to the field that you've intended to create and slide into it, and then they open. And so my question for Patrick, is there something in you that's changed from that experience of being witness to what is possible in a community?
Well, that's a pretty deep question. I would say that it gives me hope. I would say that I think I even mentioned that, like, to Janet, if not to the whole group, that, and especially with seeing Takani, that kind of thing really gave me a lot of hope. And the lasting effect for me personally has been continuing to listen to the keeper in my dealings with whatever I'm dealing with. And I just look at it like a shared consciousness. I know the keeper is a hard thing for people to understand. It's just sort of a shared energy, a shared consciousness. There's ropes of connection between me and my problems or whatever I need to work on in life. And so those have keepers. And they can talk to us and inspire us in different ways. So I think part of the lesson for me has been in deep listening. Really deep listening has been a huge part of it. And then hopeful in terms of the future. I do think this is a 200-year plan moving into residential communities. I don't know what that would look like or if it's possible and how it would incorporate everyone that might want to participate. So I agree that the way to approach it is weekly or monthly. And so I took this energy of listening to the keeper with me to another gathering I went to this summer, which was Sal's gathering in South Dakota. It was a Lakota lineage, and everybody noticed and everybody said something. everybody, Sal, Erica, the elders, they were all like, oh, wow, you're really listening. And because like I was like, it's time to go to the airport and pick someone up. And I just got in my car. I got to the airport. They came out of the airport right when I drove up. And they weren't even expecting me to be there to pick them up. So it's a 2-hour drive. Stuff like that, you know, just making things, it really makes things run smooth when we're listening on a deeper level. And also when you leave that space away from the schedule, I think following to Connie's lead a lot was really a very graceful way for this thing to go. It's like, oh yeah, it's time to eat. You know, he's hungry. So it's time to do this. He's ready to play. He's tired, you know, and he even led the fire. He chopped firewood for half an hour. He had to learn how to do it. So I taught him how to chop firewood. He's swinging a axe, full swing, chopping firewood. And I was blown away, but he was doing it safely. So he learned, because he's like, we got to keep this fire going all night. We got to keep this fire going, you know? And so he extended that energy of that part of the meeting too. So anyway, thank you for asking.
So cool. The youngest one, right, is likely the closest to natural design, right? Because it hasn't been conditioned out of that young person yet. So they're still in that flow of, right, when I'm motivated or when I'm needing to take a nap or that kind of thing. So there's so much genius in what you just shared.
You're getting me excited to want to do this more here where we live. I'm just remembering and feeling how rewarding that is for everybody and how these families feel so alone and isolated and struggling. It's just me and my kids and, oh, you know, but when you can come together like this, the kids can all sort of fall into that organic play space together and the parents can just breathe, you know, and somebody else can attend to them. Not that we're ignoring them, but there's like this natural thing, like, you know, Patrick working with Takani, you know, it's just a natural magnetism. And, you know, especially when you have a fire going or there's fishing or there's other activities, basket making, whatever, there's so much surface area. I like to call that surface area for these natural mentoring moments and these connections to emerge. So, yeah, thanks for being brave and just going for it. I think that's really a blessing for the people who got to attend. And I think for all of you as well. And I know Marita is the fourth person who isn't with us, but, you know, I just want to thank you all for, you know, for just playing with it and saying, oh, hey, it's natural cycle stuff. We're in a class. Let's just do it. Here's a gathering of people coming up. Let's just play. You know, that's also a very recommended approach. You know, be playful with it. It works so much better than being serious.
I'm so grateful to have been in the natural design cycles class at the moment and have had those lessons. Because people were coming in late and we joked about it. Well, maybe they stopped to rescue a dog, you know, and there were actual things from your course. It was like, you know, we're going to be really allowing everybody, you know, to be on their own time. I'm just grateful for the children that were there. I don't have children. I like to be the auntie. And so this community coming together was enriching for me. And it just seemed that whole, all those needs were met for what a gift to be able to come together and meet each other where we all are. Yeah. Thank you guys, everybody.
Having the children there really rounded out the roles that we were able to take and the mentoring that was able to happen. And it gave a sense of purpose for everybody in their individual roles and for the whole gathering as a whole. So I'm grateful as the mom to be able to, like John said, have that sort of stepping back and allowing the community to step up and form around this multi-generational, you know, dynamic that we had. And in particular, I want to call to attention the culture of allowance that was present there. And we were all actually sort of, it was sort of something in the keeper, it was sort of emerging out of the gathering and also something that we were consciously aware of and noticing as it was going on. And it was really, really refreshing as a parent to be in that culture and to be around other people that are holding that attribute in so much, giving so much importance to that attribute. And I think that's something that's beautiful about these gatherings, and whether it's living together or coming together regularly, is being able to really lift up these attributes that might not be present in the rest of society. So I was really grateful to be able to have them role modeled by Martha and Patrick and so many adults all unified in that role modeling. That's what I'm looking for in gatherings for my kids to be part of. So thank you all for doing that.
Beautiful. I think that multi-generational, you know, the layering, having the children, having the adolescents, having the 20-somethings, the 30-somethings, right? That's something that's so missing in how we typically gather in these modern times. And when that's there, the attributes of connection, you know, are being held in each of those layers. The beauty of awareness, of structure, as you, Martha, particularly were talking about in the beginning, having the structure for an awareness of the attributes of connection and the natural cycles and the 10 stones. And then, you know, having that there as a structure that we look to and tend to, but then having that culture of allowance, like the structure allows the flow to move through and allows the listening, right, to follow what's actually wanting to happen in the moment, and to have a cultural allowance, not only on other people's behavior, but on what does this keeper, what does this actual gathering want to do? What's happening in this present moment? It's like we tend to kind of want to control, right? We're going to do these things, you know, people are going to show up at this time. And yeah, to let go of that is like kind of scary for a lot of people, right? Like, oh, we have to control so things will go well. But really, it's like having these connection points of what are we really tuning into? What is the natural purpose, right? The natural mindset of coming together. So anyway, I've really appreciated your all of your shares, and really appreciating just hearing how well it went and how deep it went, and that, you know, this is like you three coming together doing this for the first time together with a group of people that are not familiar with what you have put together, right? That this is all happening behind the scenes, and that it really did emerge into this beautiful, heart-opening and connective experience.
You know, I'd like to just add to that, Sarah, because it really made me realize one of the biggest wrapping the bundle things for me was slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And what that means is to listen deeply requires a certain slowness. And I would say peace is probably the attribute of connection we're talking about there, because like I've always had trouble holding a sense of peace where I could listen while I was around other people, because other people are such a distraction. And so it's so hard to listen when you're in the thick of it in a group. And so moving slow allows for that space of peace. And that allows for the listening, because you can't really listen when you're not in that slow, peaceful state. Now, if you're listening, then all of a sudden you're working on what needs to be worked on. And that's where it becomes fast, because the things that need to get done, get done. It just works out. And I was telling someone at the other gathering I was at, Tom calls this the oneness walk to his keepers groups. He's like, this is the oneness walk where everybody's listening and we're all like meeting needs and everything's working in the community because everybody's right there where they're supposed to be in that listening, peaceful zone. So I would say, I have not mastered that at all. In fact, it's really difficult for me. Like I really struggle with communities really big time. I've talked to John about this in the past, and it just comes from a damaged childhood. And so we learn over time, like to develop that internal piece, and then everything happens and things happen quickly and easily and needs get met. So thanks.
Well, I just want to say thank you to all of you for coming on and sharing this experience. And I'm really grateful that you are out there doing it, and you're an inspiration for those who are going to hear this, and who knows what will come from this, but I think it's going to be something good. So thank you all.
To move at the speed of our nervous system, to move at the speed of peace, and to move at the speed of connection. I think that's one of the lessons of the whole thing, and it's really wonderful. So thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.